listening to Racing Nation on Radio Aerie.
Slava, comrades. It is September 26, 2017, and you are listening to Racing Nation on RadioArian.com. This is your lordship, Lord of the Northern Realm, Lord Goyhammer. And with me, as always, my comrade in the trenches and my brother in fight and IRL, Sir Steven Lanzer. How's it going, broski?
Good, sir. How are you?
Yeah. I'm all right. Kind of doing the gay thing tonight.
Oh boy.
Actually, I had no internet. I had no internet at my abode. It's been out since about 2 p.m. on a Friday. Still hasn't kicked back in. I was going to call this in on my cell phone and headphones through Skype, but we said, screw that shit. I was looking forward to like a quality sounding cast, because then I can hit the 31 band digital equalizer and, you know, play around with sounds and shit. Normally we can't do that when we have guests because everything's being recorded through
That's
Skype.
True, yeah.
So, yeah, I lost. Not that I have time to go into the stupid shit, but since I'm talking about shitty service, shitty phone service, Sprint sucks. I don't even know the internet provider I have. I don't even know. It doesn't matter. They all fucking suck. We're all running off outdated bullshit technology. I live 10 miles away from one of the biggest clean coal burning power plants in North America. And I tell you, once a week around the same time, we'll lose power.
That sucks.
Why the fuck am I losing power?
We have one of the oldest power grids. We have one of the oldest power grids in the world. I mean, that's the part of industrialized America that people don't realize. Is like, people freak out about, solar flares and all that shit. But to be honest, I mean, our grid is so old, it makes it very vulnerable.
Well, I don't know about all the grid bullshit, but I mean, they built this power plant. It took at least 10 years to fucking build this power plant. One of the biggest bodies of fresh water on the planet. So they got all the access to the clean water for steam and whatever they do, whatever bullshit they do over there. Most of the infrastructure is underground, cables, fiber optics, whatever. So in the kicker is, we're losing power on sunny days where there's no wind, no weather. And it's kind of frustrating when, you know, everyone's got to reboot their computers, everything, you know, game systems, computers, everything's in sleep or standby mode, and then the power goes off, and then you got to reboot all this shit.
Yeah.
So that, but, you know, then it gives us an excuse to, pull together and do a,
yep.
You know, quasi-live show, even though it's not live,
yeah,
but
not live.
I don't know, whatever. But I think tonight... I think we decided that we're going to talk about Harold Covington's last cast he put out. It sounds like he's getting... a combination of him getting frustrated and... I don't know. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I don't know. It sounds like he's a little frustrated. I don't know if he's getting impatient. But if you've been around as long as he has, I mean, I'm sure he's seeing our windows of opportunity or our chance is slipping away, and it's not looking good. We're being genocided.
I'll even take it a step further. I think it's Harold Covington's call to arms in a lot of ways. I'm not as versed in his past podcast as you are, but my history of him and the movement, I totally agree with him. I think he's getting to a point in his time and his age where he's getting flustered, frustrated. I think Harold's caught between time and the hour at hand, if you will, to a certain degree. I mean, he sees that, you know, Zog's clamping down, think the machinations are happening, and I think he's really, like I said, it's more of a call to arms. It's one of the most moving casts that I've ever heard him produce, and I think it's very important, and it's important enough where I felt like we needed to give it a bit more focus and to give it a little bit more light and really kind of discuss it. A lot of the things that were stated in this particular podcast, we have been also touching base on Race and Nation for quite a time now. And I think it was just a good culmination of his subject matter and a lot of the things that we have been talking about as well.
Yeah, but absolutely. I'm not going to split hairs with you at all. I'm just going to say, I wouldn't say it was like his best, but like you said, I mean, he's got about 7 years worth of podcasts, I think. This one is definitely, it's got a different tone to it. He's in your face. It's more like he don't give a shit anymore. He's getting to that point where he don't give a shit. This is definitely a fist in the face of Zog. And now he's kind of taunting him a little bit, maybe. I think we got about 4 clips. We're going to play throughout the cast and just kind of comment on them a little bit. Yeah, we kind of want to do this because, I mean, I don't feel many people kind of, I must say they don't agree with them, but I don't think a lot of people out there. Well, you know, hold on. Let me just say something real quick before I get anything, because I don't want this cast to sound like we're fucking calling anyone out, because we're not. We're not calling anyone out by name. We're not calling anybody out by organization. Period. At no time throughout this cast am I referring to anyone in particular or any one particular organization. This is very important because too many people get caught up in the black hole of undermining white unity. So that's one of the things. So I'll start out asking, you know, what white unity is. Because I don't think we have it, or not much of it. And right now I'm staring at the SPLC hate map. Active hate groups in the United States, and right now we're at 892, which I think that's an old map.
It's in the 900s now.
I could probably list 300 or more pro-white organizations if I had the time. And it's like, you know, what you doing, white man? Why so many organizations? I don't think that's unity whatsoever. I don't see that as unity, all these fucking different white organizations. I mean, alone, looking at this map, we got almost 185 that are just anti-LGBT and other. So basically anti-gay. Well, why are there 184? I don't know. I think there's too many out there. You know, there is no white unity. We should all be under one or two or three banners at most. It's pure bullshit, and it smells of what, Lanzaboy? What's it normally smell as?
Controlled opposition.
And jewelry. I mean, I've been in this struggle for 2.5 decades in one form or another. Sir Lanzerboy here a little bit longer. I think to some extent we go through a period where we think we can save our race not only democratically but peacefully, which I think is dead wrong. Throughout history shows that only violence gets results, especially when it comes down to survival or, you know, land, living space, whatever. This always seems to happen on one level or another, but never enough on a scale where people are ready to risk and sacrifice everything for our survival and the survival of our families. I mean, we've talked, we've always talked about living our day-to-day lives, going to work, coming home. You know, we got wife, kids, we got responsibilities, we got Little League, we got baseball games. It probably make us sick how many of us still watch sports ball and get in that bullshit. But because we have all these activities and all this materialistic shit to look forward to, I mean, I think that kills any spirit to fucking take back what's ours.
Now, from now on, I'm going to include regular segments on Radio Free Northwest dealing with the subject of direct action to bring about change in American society, up to and including what I term the non-consensual replacement of the existing government in the Pacific Northwest with a sovereign and independent white homeland. Yeah, the time has finally come to talk about that. I will designate these segments of the show when they are on here as Brandenburg Lectures, after the landmark Supreme Court ruling which makes them possible, Brandenburg versus Ohio. Now let me explain what I mean by that. In 1969, the United States Supreme Court issued a ruling called Brandenburg versus Ohio, which stated that public discussion of proactive alternatives to the current electoral system do in fact constitute constitutionally protected free speech and are not actionable. To make a long story short, Brandenburg versus Ohio is the reason that William Pierce was able to write and publish the Turner Diaries, and the reason that I have been able to write and publish my Northwest novels without ending up in prison for the crime of upsetting and annoying people with power. What happened was, back in the 60s sometime, an old-time Klan man, Clarence Brandenburg, got a bit impassioned at a cowpasture rally and made some rather strong and pointed remarks with regard to what needs to be done to federal government officials who plot to destroy the white race and Western civilization, and who do harm to white children through race mixing, school integration, and other forms of genocide. Something about how such people deserved to die, which of course they do. Brandenburg did not name anyone or threaten anyone in particular. He basically just said that those who betray their country and their oaths of office, not to mention every standard of human decency, by taking money from the United States in order to do harm to children, deserve to die. Which is hardly a sentiment confined to us wicked right-wing extremists. As some reporters and a local television station were present at the Klan rally, they recorded and broadcast Brandenburg's speech, and he was subsequently arrested and prosecuted under an Ohio law against something called, quote-unquote, criminal syndicalism, whatever the hell that is, but which, among other things, prohibited the incitement and advocacy of overthrowing the government of the United States by force and violence. Now, you will notice that I did not say the lawful government of the United States, since nothing that the government has done has been truly lawful or constitutional for a long, long time. Not since 1861, in fact. Anyway, the eventual result was the landmark Supreme Court ruling that I just mentioned, Brandenburg versus Ohio, which ruling basically affirmed that theoretical and philosophical discussion of the pros and cons of direct action in order to bring about change in American society, i.e. shooting the thieving motherfuckers who rule us in the head, wiring bombs to their cars and blowing their scaly asses to pieces, hanging them by their wretched necks and watching them kick and piss and crap in their pants while they die, that kind of thing. Anyway, theoretical discussions about all those consummations devoutly to be wished, as Shakespeare put it, is legal and constitutionally protected free speech under the First Amendment. Of course it is. How does anyone think the First Amendment and this entire country came into being in the first place? Before the Minutemen stood against the Redcoats at Lexington Green and Concord Bridge in 1775, first, there were all those long and boring speeches and pamphlets and committees of correspondence and so forth that American students used to study in history class before real American history was replaced in the curriculum with politically correct horseshit. It would have been rather difficult for the Supremes to rule otherwise in view of the fact that some of the most famous bits and pieces of real American history, of the kind that used to be learned by school children beginning in about the third grade, were, in fact, speeches and writings by the Founding Fathers before they became Founding Fathers, clearly advocating armed military resistance against the British Crown and violent disobedience against British laws, some of which were writings and utterances that led directly to acts of insurrectionary violence, such as the Boston Tea Party, attacks on British customs officials, the burning of British revenue cutters, this kind of thing. Now, today, we regard the writing and speeches of men like George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Paul Revere, Thomas Paine, and John Adams as mere windbag blathering in a language that we can no longer understand. But in their day, those words got men killed and fell into the legal and moral category of what our lords and masters today refer to as terrorism. If the Founding Fathers were alive today, the Joint Terrorist Task Force would be listening to their podcasts and intercepting their emails. For example, there's Patrick Henry's famous Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death speech on the floor of the Virginia House of Burgesses. There's Thomas Paine's Common Sense and the Rights of Man. And there are the writings of men like Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and John Hancock, all of whom openly discussed the desirability and feasibility of warfare with the crown in order to secure American freedom. And I mean with muskets, not votes in a silly little box.
I don't know, what say you, Negroni?
I mean, I totally agree with that. I mean, I think we're at a very important point in our existence, actually. And people, especially those who are vanguard like Harold Covington, are really seeing the writing on the wall. I've also have seen the writing on the wall. And we were often critical, though I've been accused often of punching right, and it's not as much as punching right as much as I'm trying to preserve what is white. And that has always been a huge issue for me. If there's foundational issues or questions about Jewry, then yes, often than not, it is very dismissive by people like myself and LG in any flag or banner that you fly. It doesn't matter if you're AR. It doesn't matter if whatever white identity politic fucking organization you are attached to. And the time is, you know, nil, my brothers. I mean, it's getting to the point to where we can't sit here and nitpick each other anymore. At the same time, we have to have a strong foundation. It's a very tumultuous time. It's very, very, very critical. It's getting to the point to where we cannot sit there and just submissively dismiss Jewry and faggotry. We have to vigorously do so as a foundational point, but at the same time, this common fucking foot bullshit infighting crap that we entrench ourselves in has got to become something of the past. It's exactly what the fucking Jews want us to do. It's exactly what Dave has set out to do. It's evident in everything I look at. It's evident in everything that we do, from fake Twitter bullshit fed accounts on Twitter to, you know, them monitoring us and deplatforming people. And I think people like Harold Covington and the things that have happened to Don Black and, you know, and yeah, to a lesser degree, even poor old Andrew England being denounced and also being deplatformed as well. Though I don't agree with everything that he stands for represents, I do respect and warrant his need to exist, if you will. I don't want the Jews shutting him down because I don't want the Jews shutting any one of us down. No matter if we disagree or agree with them, it doesn't matter. We can get into that later. I think the end game result is, like I said, the time is becoming too critical. We're going to have, like we've said before, we're going to have to start finding the iron in our hearts, to start finding the iron in our hands, and taking action and doing something. It's going to be inevitable. And it's going to be, and you know what? And as much as we're shit on and down looked upon, it's going to be people like me and LG. And yeah, a lot of other people in the contingency and in the ranks that you probably wouldn't associate with on a day-to-day basis that are willing to shed fucking blood for our race and culture. Those that are willing to put our lives on the line for our culture and race that you're not going to find in some of the other ranks and files in our movement. And that's going to really separate those who are living 14 and the 88, which people have been trying to separate lately, and I think that's bullshit, but that's a completely different subject. It's gotten to be so nitpicky and just so ridiculous, and I really think that Harold Covington coming back around and laying the foundation is something for us to build on, and that's why we're reflecting it on this particular show.
And getting back to that 1969 Supreme Court ruling in the case of Brandenburg versus Ohio, that ruling basically states that any discussion of, oh, what do we call it here, non-consensual regime change in Washington, D.C. is in fact constitutionally protected speech under the First Amendment. Now, what do we mean by non-consensual regime change? Ideally, we refer to dragging the people who rule us out of their carpeted and air-conditioned offices and beating them to death with baseball bats and iron bars, although there are other ways to go about it. Now, what I mean is change. Real change in America. Real change in who runs this country, who and how and in whose interests it's run. It's time, way past time, that we in the white nationalist movement faced up to some things that we've all known in the privacy of our own thoughts for a long time. We all know perfectly well that there is only one way any permanent change will ever come to pass in America. But we're too paralyzed with fear even to speak of it out loud, never mind to implement it. The first step is to break the taboo against speaking of these things. We've imposed that taboo on ourselves several generations ago when we became so paranoid and afraid of the police and the hidden microphones in the sugar bowl and the funny little man in the corner with the funny little tape recorder beneath his shirt that we knuckled under and shut up. We allowed the regime to take away from us the very core of our God-given right to think and to speak as we please. That right to freedom of speech, freedom of thought, and freedom of conscience was for several centuries what made America unique. Nowhere else in the world did such freedom exist. Now that it's gone, this is no longer really America anymore. It's just a big strip mall where most white people can no longer afford to buy anything.
Yep, and whether you love or hate the guy, there's really nothing on him. The guy doesn't really have skeletons in his closet. The few things people got on him that they pass around via email is bullshit shit talking by his fucking traitor brother or other family members or other people that have no shred of evidence whatsoever. All these political white nationalist leaders have it. Some are legit, some are not. I think Covington's one solid dude. Yeah, man, I was actually in a good mood, but now you kind of put me in a bad place with that little rant there, Lanzer boy. Yeah, we are being systematically... Oh, before I forget here, dude, I mean, this is kind of like our one-year anniversary since we started Race the Nation. Did you want to comment on that real quick?
Yeah, we've had a... it's been a hell of a ride. This show, more or less, I mean, it depends on you really investigate the dates or not, but more or less, we have come up on the cusp of our one-year anniversary. So Race the Nation has been in existence at this point in time for about a year. The show has definitely had some ups and downs, some turns and some twists, but we have always stayed true to our message, and the show is more or less just a journal of me and LG's existence, our day-to-day lives, and how two working-class folk families in Milwaukee chisel out an existence and try to live 1488 day in, day out. We weigh everything against the 1488. We literally try to honestly give a working class perspective on this show, and love us or hate us, we do appreciate the people that do listen and give us feedback. If you still want to get a hold of us, the best way right now is at racingnation@gmx.com, racingnation@gmx.com. You can also get a hold of us on our website if you'd like. You also check out our past archives, which I highly recommend people do, at lanzerandgoyhammer.com, lanzerandgoyhammer.com. Check out the archives. There's all kinds of links to Billy Roper's show, Radio Aryan. It's pretty interesting, good reads, and Lord Goyhammer's really good about getting information posted on there right away. So if you're interested in the show, I highly recommend you check out the website.
Yeah, and speaking of that, we kind of timed this poorly, I guess. I mean, I'm not even sure if we're going to get even to all the Covington. We have some cuts we're going to play from his last cast and kind of comment on them. Only because I don't think many people will comment on them, and probably fewer will agree with them. Yeah, and it's not, no, and I've mentioned it a couple times, it's no secret. I mean, me and Sir Lanzerboy here, we're basically making work for idle hands. We know damn well what needs to be done. We're not going to run out and do a Dylan Roof style. Nothing against him, but this isn't a one and done deal. We know what needs to be done. You got to prepare mentally and everything else. I mean, it's got to be a team play. For this to work and to be effective and hurt these motherfuckers in the government. We are being systematically genocide to one extent or another and at different degrees throughout history, primarily by our ancient enemies, the parasitical, sponging, Semitic kosher rat. Now, I mean, I used to listen to a lot more podcasts than I do now, but I'll keep hearing people comment. And like I said, in the beginning, this isn't I'm not punching right or left or whatever. No, all that shit's fucking gay. Oh, before I get into that, what I was going to say is, I mean, don't fool yourself. And I've mentioned this. You know, we do this podcast because we're kind of making work for idle hands. We're just, you know, we're waiting for the storm to break. In my, and this is just my personal opinion, I can't even exactly speak for Sir Lanzaboy here, but I don't think for one second that this podcast is a weapon against any of our foes. I guess I see it as, like he always mentions, we are just two regular dudes. We're nothing special, nothing fancy. We fucking work our hands to the bone. We've lived our lives, our whole lives, in steel-toe boots and in fucking rawhide leather gloves, hard hats, you know, throughout some point. That's just who we are. But not at any point do I think our problems or stifling our genocide through any sort of nonviolent, peaceful medium is going to work. You know what I mean?
You're fooling yourself if you think that.
Yeah, this is not how we're going to do battle. This is not how I envisioned us doing battle. This is having a podcast. I mean, but there's nothing wrong. I mean, we need information. We need literature. We need stories. We need blogs. We need articles. We need newspapers. We need podcasts. We need information. We need to know that there are people out there that are willing to fight for this. But you know, it's like, this isn't my job. This, you know, when I go to bed at night, or when I make my transition from this world to the next, believe me, I don't think I'm going to be judged by, you know, our descendants in the halls of our fathers by me having a fucking podcast talking about our proms.
No, I totally agree with that. And the flip side of that is that the digital medium for our message and the digital medium for white nationalism and national socialism is rather still a new concept. But what I don't understand is the disconnect from the older message or the older way of stylization, where we were preparing for fucking war. When I was a youth, we were preparing for fucking Rahoa. And now the youth that's coming up behind us is all just shooting out memes and fucking hitting fucking Twitter. And that's their revolution. That's their revolution. I don't know if they can even see past that as saying, we're going to have to fight. We're going to have to separate and fight. Blood is going to be shed. Lots of lives are going to be lost. The Balkanization is not going to be some pretty peaceful segregation at some fucking pep rally. It's going to be a bloody, horrible, treacherous, bloody mess. And as growing up as a youth, we were prepared for that. We were told that that's how it was going to be. And since then, and the internet and all this, whatever, that's been lost in the translation.
Absolutely.
And I think it's our responsibility, and obviously Mr. Covington's to a large degree, the Vanguard, to say, no, that's not how it's going to be. Whether you think it's extreme or we're taking it too far, it's the truth.
In my Northwest novels, I speak of non-consensual regime change here in America. And I've gotten a lot of different reactions from readers, but I've always found it fascinating that the one reaction I have never gotten, not once, is from anyone who seriously maintains that direct action isn't necessary, and that somehow we can use the existing system to bring about change and to ensure the survival of our race and the survival in at least some form of what you and I would recognize as America. Okay, that's changed maybe a little bit since Trump was elected and since Richard Spencer started doing his tiki torch thing. I suppose now maybe there are a few people who are clinging to the idea that somehow we can vote our way back into freedom or whatever, but I don't think so. I think most people find Spencer's marches to be fascinating entertainment, and some people still have a few kindly words to say in their heart about President Trump, but I honestly don't think that there's any of us now who have drunk the Trump Kool-Aid or the Spencer Kool-Aid to the point where they really believe it's possible. I really don't think that. No one believes anymore that that's possible. Oh, we have naysayers in plenty. Now, I get people telling me all the time that I'm crazy, that revolution in this country is impossible, that the whole idea of a white nation all to ourselves will never work, and the naysayers tell me at great length and in great detail why it can't be done. Not one of them ever has told me that it shouldn't be done. I suspect that even most of those old farts who used to comprise the Tea Party rallies and begged Obama not to take their life's savings and give it all to niggers and Mexicans knew full well at the time, and still know in their own hearts, that they're not doing a damn bit of good. They just go through the motions of democracy so that they can salve their consciences and convince themselves that they're not total lame dweebs without taking any personal risk themselves. And then when some liberal democratic thug or Antifa slaps their mouth shut, they'll sit on the ground weeping and wringing their hands while the Democrat maggots strip them bare, and they'll whine to each other, "Well, we did all we could." No, you didn't. You did everything except the one thing that might have worked. Most white Americans in what is left of the middle class know perfectly well that the Soros crowd, the globalists, the Democrats, however you want to designate the enemy, regard them as financial livestock to be milked and sheared and eventually slaughtered. They occasionally mutter about physical resistance and so-called Second Amendment solutions, sure, and every now and then somebody will do something stupid like the Bundys and swagger around in public wearing camouflage and waving their semi-autos in the air until they're shot down or arrested. But it's just talk, and everybody knows it, including the regime's secret police. They did not hesitate to murder Lavoie Finicum back in January of 2016. Why? Because they knew nothing would be done about it, and that's why you don't see massive FBI and Homeland Security raids against the Tea Party or the alt-right or any of our so-called groups, because these agencies know that we're full of shit. The Tea Party and the alt-right and the Proud Boys and all those yahoos are no more capable of direct action than we are. Just to be clear, moral and physical cowardice is not confined solely to the white nationalist movement itself. Like every other aspect of our character problem, it's a white thing, affecting the entire Caucasian population of this continent who have been raised by Ronald McDonald and the television set. This wee little movement of ours isn't very bright on the whole. Like Colin Jordan said, we have a very big heart and a very small head.
I wouldn't be doing you any service at all to sit here and spout off lies or conceptions or things that I think are just my view. These are things that are pretty much founded in almost any white identity, nationalism, literature, background, story, folk, precepts that you can find. From Rockwell to Lane, from Ados Mein Kampf all the way down the line, it's always been laid out the same way. The common thread is that for you to make change as a white person for survival is bloodshed. It is bloodshed. It always has been. It always will be. That is the reality. But sitting there thinking you're going to get ahead in democratic circles is foolish. And I really wish as a whole, as a movement, we could stop supporting that. That is where I believe a lot of disconnect is between us and everyone else, is that a lot of us who claim that we're playing in democratic identity politics and claim that we're fighting for white survival are still trying to do it in democratic circles. That is never, ever, ever going to happen. That America that you know and the America that you grew up in and I grew up in is a dying animal. And no one put that together more articulately than Harold Covington in this week's cast. You really should pay attention to what he has to say. And I really do recommend you listen to it, because the gentleman definitely is laying it out there for you. And it is nothing but truth. It's not a good truth. It's not a happy truth. It's not a fun truth. It's a fucking truth you need to hear. Mm-hmm. Because it is reality. That is the reality that we're looking at.
Yep, exactly. And that brings me to what I wanted to bring up. I once in a while, I could probably count on two hands, maybe a dozen and a half times I've heard, and especially now, it's getting more and more popular, people fucking bringing up the ethno-state shit. Well, or not bringing up.
Or denouncing it.
Yeah, I guess it gets to the point where people are practically ignoring it for obvious reasons, which I'll get into. A lot of times I'll hear the ethno-state, which is, you're on the right path. Yeah, yeah. North America, dude, you're not taking it back. You're not taking back United States. You're not taking it back, the whole thing. You're not taking it back democratically. You're not taking it back peacefully. You can get on your knees, pray all you want. You can fucking pour out all the mead from the horns to the gods all you want. It doesn't matter, dude. I can't really speak for the Christians, honestly. Yeah. However, I think the only way to honor the old ones, the old gods, is through violence and bloodshed. I guess there's no better way to show your love for the gods other than slaughtering the ones you hate and that are threats to our existence. But anyways, what I was getting to, though, I hear a lot of ethnostate talk. And then on top of that, I'll hear there's no plan for an ethnostate. And I don't understand that. I don't understand it. I've heard at least a dozen or so times that there is no plan for an ethnostate, which in my opinion can't get any more obvious in a sense that just seems so intentional in order to reflect the fact that, like Covington says, the gun has to be reintroduced into our political struggle and that not everybody is going to survive to see the fruits of our fight for existence. And they're not. It's a scary thought, but that's sacrifice. That's reality. That's what's been going on for millennium. Millennium, dude. Like we said before, our fathers, our brothers, our grandfathers, our nephews, our sons have all gone off at one point or another to fight for our existence and our freedom and our families, dude. It happens. I don't know why in this day and age, in these last, 80 years, we don't think,
Now, that's another thing about democracy. The playing field is never level. The entire system is designed to keep insiders in and outsiders out. Elections are like high-stakes poker games in luxury hotel rooms with a $10 million buy-in. Occasional multi-billionaires like Ross Perot, Donald Trump, and Michael Bloomberg might every now and then purchase a seat at the table, but when they do, the professional card sharps take them for everything they've got, again, Trump being the one exception. That's one of the things that bothers me about Trump. He seems to be an exception to the rules, but when you look at him closely, he's not. And in any case, I don't think that the mainstream media will allow another Donald Trump to occur. I think they kind of learned their lesson in 2016, and if anybody else tries to capitalize on what Trump did and build up a base through saying out loud what white people want to hear, he will simply be silenced. That's why they're trying to deplatform all of our alternate media. Once the election is over, then the politicians don't even bother to pander anymore. Their campaign promises are promptly thrown in the dumpster, and the rich men and women in the expensive suits proceed to do whatever the hell they want for the next few years until election time rolls around again, and then once more we go through the same ridiculous farce. I won't bother to describe the kind of world that generation after generation of this kind of thing produces. We're living in it. We who live on the bottom of the heap in this society, the white people who do all the real work and who battle to keep things going in spite of all the crap, are completely and totally helpless to change anything that affects us. The government, the courts, the regular police, the secret police, the political system, the economy, the media, none of these work for us. They are all part of an entire system, the purpose of which is to keep white people down, keep us powerless, keep us voiceless. When we lose our jobs, those of us who are white and over 40 can forget about ever working again. And by the way, that goes for women as well as men. Our votes are useless because there's never anybody to vote for who might actually help us. And even if there was, elected officials no longer actually have that much power in the society. Hell, we elected a president, Donald Trump, and he can't get anything done over the opposition of the deep state. No one listens to normal white people who can't write a six-figure campaign donation check. Politicians don't listen. Judges don't listen. The media ignores us most of the time, and when they don't, they mock us and abuse us with Homer and Marge Simpson stereotypes. Nobody does anything about them. These people sit there in their plush offices and their congressional gym and their boardrooms and their weekend retreats in the Hamptons, and they do horrible, horrible things to the rest of us. Terrible and tyrannical things that destroy our lives and families, and no one has the courage to make them stop. This is why the gun has to be reintroduced into American politics, because it is the only way to make them stop doing what they're doing. For three generations now, white America has cried out to the people who rule us in rage and horror and agony, Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! Nothing has worked. We have begged and pleaded. We have petitioned for redress of grievances. We have tried to use the justice system, only to be chased out of court with curses and mocking laughter by the political gangsters in the black robes. These people are doing horrible, wicked, evil things. So why shouldn't we just kill them and make them stop?
And out of all those wars, this war is going to be so much more different. And the aspect of that is because it's for our white survival. It's not because of some Zog-filled fucking propaganda war against Germany. It's not some fucking Zog-filled propaganda war against supposed communism threat in Vietnam. It's not fucking because some Zog-filled fucking propaganda bullshit Korean fucking or North Korea fucking war up to, you know, coming up down the pipe. This is different than any other war that's laid out in front of us because it's for our absolute survival. It's for our absolute being. It's for our absolute existence. And that is the huge difference between any other war in our current history, recorded history. Well, maybe not all recorded history, but it's because it's not just because some propaganda war against some fucking, you know, made up entity or made up threat. It's going to be a war for our survival. It's going to be a war for our existence. And that is where the big difference lies. Like I said, a lot of people are just blissfully ignorant to all this. I get that. But when the Balkanization, just like I've said before in past casts that Mr. Billy Roper has put out, I do think there's going to be a handful of different Balkanization, you know, ethno states. And to simply just ignore that and some people in some conservative circles, if you will, to denounce said ethno state, that's sick. It's completely counterproductive to our movement. It has no place in our movement because an ethno state in one form or another, in one place or another, is an absolute foundational fucking imperative that has to be done. No matter what. Or we die. That's it. Whether it's the fucking Billy Roper Ozarks or Zarkia, I think he likes to call it. I think he likes to call it Ozarkia. We kid around. We call it Zarkia. Oh. Or it's Harold Covington's Northwest Front. We can sit there and be divisive all we want, but to sit there and simply ignore an ethno state, then you're either a fool, you're either controlled opposition, or you're a fucking moron. Take your pick.
And like we said in the beginning, I know I keep saying like I said, but I want to make it clear that we're not attacking the one. It's hard to watch what's going on. Yeah. And that's all. It's hard. It's nothing new, though. I mean, obviously, Covington's dealt with this in his generation, Rockwell in his generation. You know, so it's not like this is a new phenomenon. It's just we're trying to battle this rut we get ourselves into, and it has a lot to do with democracy and think we're going to find justice and freedom and the 14 words to fucking lawyers and judges and shit, and through the Constitution and Bill of Rights. That don't mean shit. But what I was going to say, too, is personally, right off the bat, you know, we're talking about, you know, having the fight. Personally, right off the bat, you know, why is any of us even concerned with surviving this struggle on a personal level? No shit. Obviously, we're not suicidal, but I'm not in this for just me and mine. As National Socialist, I'm also just as dedicated for you and yours and everybody else, our kinfolk, and for the boundaries they reside in order for them to survive and prosper. You know, so we got to get out of this, like, materialistic, selfish. I mean, it's weird. I mean, I've never actually really listened to any podcast where they talk about death. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to sound like a hard ass saying, like, either I'm not scared of dying or I don't care if I die. Well, of course I care. I got a family. I worry about how they would survive or how they would, you know, carry on. Sure. Actually, my biggest fear is would they forgive me, because a lot of our kinfolk and family don't understand the passion and love and what we want to do and what we want to build, which is so much more healthier and you know, better for them.
Well, they follow our lead too.
Yeah, of course they do.
So comes with responsibility, you know.
If you don't think there's an actual plan, and this plan is well thought out, and this plan has been well thought out before Covington even started even talking about it or being the spokesman for it. So if you do not like Covington, this is not Covington's show.
Right.
Covington is a spokesman. He's very well spoken. He is a writer. Right. He's knowledgeable in literature. Okay, he's just good at what he does. Speaking and writing is what he does good at. And I don't know why anybody wouldn't want him at the forefront, you know, writing and talking about our struggles that we need to face. Yeah. So, I mean, this Covington thing, you know, you just got to drop it. You love it, hate, fine, whatever.
But the Butler Initiative exists either with or without Covington. I think that's a lot of people get hung up on.
Yes, they do.
Whether you love the man or you hate the man, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. The Butler Plan is a good idea. The Butler Plan will work. The Butler Plan is actually in motion and is somewhat functioning, though the levels I imagine are smaller than what we would like. If you don't really think, if you're ignorant enough to think there's something not going on in the Northwest, then you're a fool. It doesn't. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Whether you love Harold Covington or you don't love him, it doesn't matter. I have great respect for him as a Vanguard. I've never met the gentleman. But at the end of the day, the Butler Initiative that he has taken under his wing under the Northwest Front is a good and viable solution for our survival. Billy Roper's theory of balkanization and him kicking out in the Ozarks is, though I don't have the plan laid out in front of me, and though it's not as publicized as much as the Northwest Front Initiative, sounds like it is probably going to be a good and viable initiative for white survival in that area as well. I'm not going to sit here and dismiss one over the other. We're foolish to think that there's not going to be several different balkanizations that happen in America. But what I'm saying is that at the end of the day, you really should take a look at this podcast from Harold Covington. The truth that he lays out really needs to be heard. Not by me. It's fallen on deaf ears for me. I agree with everything he says. But to the people who are sitting there still thinking that Democratic circles and arenas are a win-win solution for whites, and it simply is not. It simply is not. And as soon as you can disassociate yourself from that political process, as soon as you can disassociate yourself from voting and pulling levers and thinking that good old democracy is going to come by and save you, is when you start looking for other answers. And I don't want you looking for other answers when the shit's already hit the fan. I want you to look for answers now when you still have the time to abide, when you still have time, idle time at your hands to sit there and seek out an answer. Look for property. Look for jobs. Relocate. Network. PLE. Northwest Front. Whatever. Whatever the solution you think might be. It's that time to do so now. And I think overall, that's the home message we're trying to nail home. The political process, stop wasting your fucking time. It's a waste of fucking time. You sitting there wrenching your hands over the fucking lever and you wrenching your hands over what Trump's going to deliver for you with the wall is bullshit. It's not going to happen. And I also want to ring this message to my brethren and kin in the fucking EU, especially those in Britain. I know you guys don't have a fucking armed citizenry, and I know you guys are underneath the fucking gun with this goddamn mass immigration Muslim Islamic filth shit. I recommend that you motherfuckers get together, PLE as much as you can, do what you gotta do and prepare. And if the Northern England or Northern part of England, whatever you gotta do, network, network, network. It's time to get off the fucking, you know, computer and get off of fucking internet. You know, in real life, and like I said, like Billy Roper says, getting in real life, networking with people. You guys in EU need it more than ever, because that's pretty much all you got. Here in the States, we have a little bit more of a luxury just with the armed citizenry, but we're lazy.
And we're spread out.
We're spread out too far.
Yeah.
And we're completely subdued and brainwashed by mass media. So again, the Jews' fucking method of operation is always different depending on where you're looking at across the world, but they do have a method.
Well, you know, kind of since you kind of touched on it a little bit, I don't want to put William the Balkanizer on the spot. I don't want to put the Jarl of the Shieldwall Network on the spot. But you brought up a good point because it's actually something I've never... And I've listened to all of Harold's podcasts. He's got 7 years of podcasts, and I listen to him, and I'm not shitting you at all. I have no reason to lie to you through a fucking black snowball right now, believe it or not. Yeah, mine's white. Yours is black.
Nigger one.
Yeah.
Hit that.
We'll see. But anyways, I've never heard anyone from the Northwest Front comment on this. Without a doubt, I think that's the most important initiative I think that's out there right now. It's the one that makes the most sense, and I think it's our the only chance we have. But Covington in the past has mentioned multiple times, more than, you know, I can count. He has mentioned in Soviet Union back then was huge. You know, it's obviously it's huge. That broke up, but it broke up in many pieces too. Now me and Lanzerboy here, and especially him being from Texas and Roper being from Arkansas. I believe he's been there all his life.
Yeah.
Or at least that's where he's born. Parts. I don't know. I could be talking out of the side of my ass, dude, and taking the piss out of my own sail. We know. And I mean, Covington, I'm got to know, there are thousands of Southern white boys with their fishing poles, with their fucking shotguns, with their four-wheelers and their jacked-up trucks and Confederate flags. They've got so much history and blood invested in that soil down there, they're just not going to move. I think that's pretty safe to say. I think Covington and Northwest Front and the Northwest Imperatives got more than they need. They're going to have plenty of people once they lock and load and get on with this. But I think there's going to be a lot of people. And like I said, I don't want to put William the Balkanizer on the spot. But yeah, there's going to be a big Balkanization down there. It's going to have a lot of white boys in it.
Goddamn right.
And they need to be fucking ready also.
Yeah.
And I don't know. We might. We got ideas for a cast coming up. We got to hash out the details because we're not sure. But this is something I've never even heard. Yeah. But regardless, and this cannot be repeated often enough. I'm just going to leave it at that with the south of the Mason-Dixon line. That's something we're going to have to talk to Roper about or what, because something's going to happen down there.
No shit.
Yeah, and those boys. Yeah, I mean,
they're getting like ticks.
Yeah,
they ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, they're fucking Alabama ticks down there, and they ain't going nowhere.
I wish them the best. I mean,
oh, absolutely. I just don't care for the South because one, I can't stand the heat. I can't stand the heat, and I don't feel that's like my natural habitat. Now I don't have a fucking globe in front of me right now or a map where I can trace the longitude latitude lines on the fucking globe and see if the South is parallel with Southern Europe and the Mediterranean states. It might be. I mean, Greece, you know, I don't sound stupid, but they look pretty fucking hot sometimes and sunny and shit. But that's not it, dude. That's not in my blood. I'm Baltic and Scandinavian.
Right.
And Celtic, man. I need clouds. I need rain. I need chill. I need cold. I need snow. You know, I need that shit. So it's there. If it was to balkanize, it'd be more than the NF, though. You know,
exactly.
Not to end it, but just it cannot be repeated often enough. The Northwest Imperative is above all driven by one single and decisive factor, that being the complete lack of any other realistic alternative plan, not including William the Balkanizers. Like I said, we'd have to talk to that dude. I don't know how much we should bring it up.
Well, I mean, well, there's a huge difference between Billy Roper sitting there theorizing about the breakup of America and the Balkanization of America and the Northwest Imperative. Northwest Imperative has a game plan. They have territory lines. If you read the books, obviously they're blueprints to more or less like how things would get done, form a government, national socialism, things like that. I mean, there's things that are laid out in these books that tell you how things would run. I'm not going to sit there and put words in Billy's mouth
and say
this and that and the other. Mm-hmm. This that's a definitely a conversation we should have. I don't know if they have an imperative or some kind of game plan, but definitely we should focus on that. I think that's a great conversation to be had, and we're definitely making some plans on Racing Nation to get that to come to a head, because I definitely think that's a goddamn conversation we definitely need to have.
Yeah, and I think we got a few more minutes, but I'm not ending it with this, but this is where we're at, and this is fact. This is fact. What I was saying before, the Northwest Imperative is above all driven by one single decisive factor, that being the complete lack of any other realistic alternative plan to secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. Speaking of the balkanization of America, my Haste in the Day books are en route. Mm-hmm. Not that you would fucking read them anyways, but I'll let you know how they are.
I actually do have a couple of Mr. Roper's books that I have read.
Oh, you do?
But they're in storage. So like all my other books, they're always put away.
Yeah, and you know, we might have brought them up a little too much, you know. It might be a little too much for comfort, but we're not trying to put him on the spot. The reason, though, he definitely understands the balkanization is coming.
Well, he's on the same page as us.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Just like Harold is to us.
And I had to think long and hard, man. I think long and hard, you know, and it's almost kind of silly to think the only thing, right, the only place, you know, white people would congregate, right, would be the Northwest. Right. No, the Northwest is actually, that's like more of a proactive movement, right, yeah, to like move things along, force them.
But the fallout from that's going to be other areas. The fallout from
It could be. But, and then you got to think of the benefits. Mm-hmm. Two fronts are better than one front.
Exactly.
I mean, just imagine, and I don't give a fuck if government's listening. They know. Do they know this? They've brainstormed all the possibilities. Right. They got us all on file. I'm not advocating nothing for nobody. And like common sense, you gotta, you know, if you got my constitution, I should be okay, because I ain't, you know, I didn't mention anyone specific. Yeah, well, William might be in a position where, you know, a lot of shit's going to go down in his area.
No, I agree with that.
You know what I mean? It might be, you know, it could blow up to be a lot of work, you know, for him. But I mean, if anything, you need people like Roper.
So once again, if you need to get a hold of us, please email us at racingnation@gmx.com, racingnation@gmx.com, or you can just visit us at lanzerandgoyhammer.com, lanzerandgoyhammer.com. There is all kinds of awesome information, links to our archives, etc., etc. I want to once again thank Lord Goyhammer for gracing us with his presence this week. Everyone in the Racing Nation family, I want to say hail victory.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I mean, I don't know if people go through our archives, but we're not like blowing smoke up your ass, man. There's one on DNA, and I know a lot of you fools out there don't like DNA, and I understand why, and it's legitimate, but I actually did the test, and I've been vindicated, and that is why I am Lord. I am actually Lord. Right. It's in my blood. Yeah.
And you really should go through our archives. You should do everything that we say to do. Honestly, though, you should go through our archive. We have done shows concerning people who have moved out to the Northwest Front. I call them ghost wolves. We've done a couple DNA shows. We've had awesome Women of Aaron Unity on the show. We had a bunch of inserts and segments from a gentleman who handled himself as Van Drasco, who really, really nailed down some of the 88 precepts for us and did some really great production pieces for us and what he considered the Pack series. I can go on and on, but there's no point. Please follow our archives. There are some great shows, I feel, that we have put together for you. So if you like these current shows that you hear on our radio, Arian, please feel free to check out our archive. I think you'd be very, very pleased to see what you fall into, because I think we've put together some really great cast in the year that we've been together and doing these. We do care about the show. We do try to hold us to a higher caliber of production. And though we poke fun at each other, we are family. And along with that comes, you know, a lot of brevity and allowances and leniency towards each other. But we do care about each other very much, and our families know each other. And that, I think that really kind of bleeds through to like the journal of our lives on this show, which is, gives the show kind of a different aspect, I believe. Anyways, check out the archive. I really highly recommend it. If you really like the shows you've been hearing on Radio Aryan, do yourself a favor and check it out. Any other feedback, comments, concerns, you know how to get a hold of us. And like I said, everyone in the Racing Nation family, I wish them hell victory.
I appreciate that, Sir Lance Boy. Thank you for having me over. It's always great to see the family, the girls. I want to thank you for your hipster faggot American IPA beer, which I am now officially okay to drink. And, yeah, I mean, we kind of fooled around. This is our one-year anniversary show, but the message is serious. It really is. And we got to get our shit together. And, yeah, thanks for listening. Defeat never. Victory forever.
Podcast is a general discussion of certain aspects of human and political dynamics. It does not advocate, pledge or incite any individual or group to commit unlawful acts of violence against anyone.
Fuck America, I'm done.